This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Your mom is a podcast. Your mom is a podcast. Your mom is a podcast. Your mom is a podcast.
First of all, let's just say I love you.
You're talking to the listeners or you're talking to me?
What was your name? And can you introduce yourself just for the listeners, not because I forgot?
Okay. So my name is Sandeep Parikh.
Oh, right.
For
yes.
The listeners.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm Alana Weintraub. I've also recently learned that you say my last name wrong.
Yeah, I've learned that too.
And I'm not willing to work on it.
Did you ever say your last name?
I think I did. That's why I'm not mad at it.
I think you did, because I do try to make a real point to like learn people's names. And then what happened is, I think I was taught wrong. And then it got ingrained. And then I've heard you repronounce it. And I want to say it right. But now it's so like the grooves have been set. So I will work on that.
You know why you're forgiven? Because I think I was also taught wrong. Because I don't think there is a right. I think it's a name that was like translated three times from three different languages.
Right, so it right.
But I know that your name is Sandeep Parikh. And you say Sandeep Parikh.
I, according to my parents, pronounce my own name wrong.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
How many immigrants does it take to say one name right?
Yeah.
I want to talk about so many things today.
Okay.
One, this is our season finale. We've had a good run.
Yeah.
Taking a bit of a break. TBD.
Taking a break from our break.
We're taking a break from our break to let you know that we're taking a break. We took a break because there was a catastrophe.
Oh, the world got set on fire. Yeah, I wouldn't say we took a break as much as a break took us.
As much as we were broken.
Yeah, we've put some pieces back together. For those of you who were unaware, the LA wildfires affected my family. We were displaced from our homes, which I now realize I say that we lived in Altadena. I never used to say that because I was like trying to hide our... Yeah, I'd say live in LA. But now I feel like more... Okay, now that Altadena's been burned to the ground, I guess I can say that's where we used to live. It's very sad, very tragic. I love Altadena. So it's painful. The shining silver lining. The diamond in the coal has been that we've gotten to move near you.
You live about 6 minutes away from me.
I think even less.
The shining truth that has emerged from all of this, which I think is the realest silverlist lining, is that your son wrote my son a birthday card.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote, "You are the best person I've ever met."
That's so
and he
sweet.
Wrote, "I love you so much," two times at two different places.
Yeah.
And their relationship is so authentically stoked on each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, they are crazy stoked. They push all of each other's like excitement buttons. You know, they just like, they get so amped to see each other. It's really incredible. Yeah.
Well, I think your kid loves to be a leader. He is such a little leader. And my kid loves it when someone else initiates play.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Great, I'll play whatever anybody is playing." And so
that's an age thing though, too. I don't think it's like,
oh, I don't necessarily think it's their personality forever.
Right.
But right now their dynamic is so, and it's also like big kid, little kid.
Totally.
Like, but it warms my heart to also think about us as kids when we knew each other, when we met in our
We were kids,
early mid 20s, and you know, and you were kind of the leader, and I was like, I just want to play.
It's true, yeah.
We met because, well, I mean, we met through like social circumstances, but then we got close because Sandeep was directing this web series, and I was new to the industry. And I was like, can I just do anything and I'll do it for free? And so I like organized your post paperwork and sent out t-shirts that you were selling and went to Comic-Con with you and all that stuff.
My favorite way to hire someone. Can I just do anything?
Can I do anything and do it for free?
Yeah.
And I promise I'm good at it. And yeah. And I worked out of your house that I later ended up living in because we became roommates. And it's just such a, to see our kids be friends is such a cool evolution. But there was this one point last night that was so funny when we were playing with our kids in the hot tub and your son squirted you in the face. And I would say that you're a very gentle parent. Like you have such deep empathy for your son's experience. You have so much understanding for what his brain is going through, for what his body's going through, for how he can regulate himself, how he can't, where he's dysregulated, how he is. You already know why he's acting a certain way. You know?
Try to.
That's how it appears to me. And so because of that, you don't have to like lay down the law. You don't do that kind of parenting. There are boundaries, but you don't have to lay down the law. And yesterday we were in the hot tub and he squirted you in the face. I think maybe for the second time after you told him not. And you were like, okay, if that happens again, I'm taking away the squirters.
Yeah.
And then you were immediately caught yourself and you were like, and that's still gentle parenting because I it's a natural consequence. And then we were kind of like, oh, this is actually defensive parenting. This is not gentle parenting. You are now in fear of some kind of repercussion or.
Well, yeah, I think the gag, I mean, it was kind of more of a gag that next.
That next sentence was a bit of a gag, but your feeling around it was real, which is like, I need to tell you why I am being a way that I'm not normally.
Well, I mean, I think it was. We really do ascribe to this idea that like rewards and punishments are like not the way to go, and aren't really helpful in the long run to getting to intrinsically motivating the kid to do the thing that you'd like them to do or to be the person you hope that they would be. The rewards and punishments end up being a manipulation, and what all it sort of teaches them is to like how to not actually feel gratitude when they say thank you or whatever, but actually just like do the right thing at the right time so they get the thing that they want. Which is to, oh, you said thank you, so now you get to play with the toy that they gave you, kind of thing. But I do catch myself in those moments where I'm like, oh, did I just drop a punishment down? But part of it is like, no, actually, like natural consequences to doing something you don't want them to do or crossing a boundary is not a punishment. It's like, it does teach them that they.
But you announcing it to him across the pool was pretty hilarious.
And that was a joke for you.
It was a natural consequence. Okay, but it was still so funny. And if it was a joke for me, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Also, it made me notice our different styles of parenting. And one of the things I could probably learn from you is that before we got in the, I was in the pool with the two kids before you got in there. And I asked your wife, I'm like, okay, so how good is your son at swimming so that I know how to support? And she was like, oh, he cannot swim on his own. He almost just drowned yesterday. And I was like, okay, I could do that. I could be in the pool with two non-swimmers. And then your son proceeded to jump in the pool on his own with a kickboard and was killing it, was so good. And I am still hearing your wife in my ear saying he drowned yesterday.
Well, I guess it takes kind of one little – like if he didn't have the kickboard, right, he's going down. And so I think it's more like – so my wife wants to instill the fear in you so you're vigilant. He has been testing himself, which is cool. He up until very recently, he was not really willing to test himself in the water very much. But that was the quote unquote almost drowning, was that he was like, hey, I'm going to – and he announced it. He's like, I'm going to go underwater right now. And then he went under and then – he didn't come up very quickly. Mm. And then we like went and grabbed him and he was coughing and stuff. And so he was like trying, he's testing his own, you know, skill level basically.
And as he was making his way across the pool, he turned around to like say something to us. And I was like, hey, look where you're going. Keep kicking. And Sadiq just goes, trust your body. And that's all he said. And I'm like, I feel like I need to be side coaching you. And you don't feel that way. And I actually admire that, because I think what I'm trying to do is comfort myself and control the situation and be like, but he didn't actually need my advice. And you knew that. You knew that he just needed to keep trusting his body, which I think is great advice. And I actually request that you give me that advice whenever I come
in. I'll shout trust your body all the time. Just random.
If you see me walking down the street, just that's the new cat call. That's the wokest cat call.
Hey girl, trust your body.
You better trust that body.
Yeah, it's been really joyful. It really has been the shining bright silver lining, is to just see our kids really hit it off in such a sincere way. And like, my little one does not like hanging out with little ones usually at all. Like, kids that are young. He even says, I don't like kids that are younger than me or my age. I want them to all be older. And I'm like, yeah, but and then I'm like, yeah, okay, that's great. But think about them. Like, they're now hanging out with a young kid, and they're like, he's like, well, they should want to hang out with me. I'm like, I'm glad
and
you have that
I
confidence.
I should want to reject them.
Yeah. But I think that's like the next leap for his brain, is to sort of like have the, like, to understand how to be nurturing to, like, it's not just about your experience and having the most fun you can possibly have, but like, how can you help somebody that, you know, doesn't know how to do certain things to like, how can you make that?
Oh my God, you mean like when your son showed my son how to hold a baseball bat?
Yeah, that was real cute.
Warming up his knuckles.
And he was really into that, and he was really happy to do that. And so sort of,
look at that. You just did that. He was so stoked. It was very cute. And my son, I think, doesn't care that much about baseball. Like, literally across the street. And he was like, a kitty. Hey, look, a kitty.
He was more into the kitty. He was doing his own cat call. At that age, like, that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be like in a constant state of wonder by their environment, and to like see the next cool, interesting thing. But for a minute, he was really interested in holding the bat and taking some swings, and it was really cute.
Can we talk about what this transition has meant for you in other ways?
Sure.
Like, you can not return to Altadena for a long time.
Yeah.
To that house. So you're kind of in liminal period between, you don't know what your next step in permanent housing is going to be.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to be kind of in this, I guess, purgatory or, yeah, this.
I'm going to call you a floater. Space. Do you mind if I call you a floater?
Sure. You know, it's funny all the little terms that people call you. Like, so apparently we're.
I just meant because you're a poop, but that's because I have a 4-year-old.
Because my poop floats. No. So we've been called we're called smokers by the insurance companies because we've been smoked out of our house. Our house is still standing. The structure is intact, but the smoke and the ash is so toxic that it's sort of like pervaded the home. And so there's the potential and likelihood that like we'll be tearing it down to the studs and having to like get all the insulation out of the house and all the drywall out of the house and replacing it. So it's a whole big project. And then there's the question of just like, do we really want to be like in Altadena? It's like one thing if our house burned or just a couple houses burned or something, but like this is we're talking about 2 9/11s worth of debris that has been created by 9,000 structures that have been burned down. So it's really, the question is do we want to be a part of a rebuild for the next 5 years for ages 5 through 10 of my son's life, you know, and questioning questioning lots of things about the, you know, health of the area or not. It's like, how much do we want to be proactive and really a part of that experience? Because it's going to be hugely a part of our lives should we choose to go back. So we're still kind of like not sure. There's a lot of big question marks about like, you know, whether we can even afford to live elsewhere. Can we, you know, even sell the house? Like, you know, there's so many question marks right now. So we're just trying to take it a step at a time. But part of what I'm coming out on the other side of understanding is, and this came from hanging out at your son's birthday party, was, you know, we in a few quick months, you had a party for us when we first came to the area. Mm-hmm. which was really lovely. We didn't really know anybody, obviously. But you were like, hey, here are my favorite people in this area, and you know they all have kids, and you know let's welcome you to the spot. And that experience was amazing. It felt like a very warm welcome, but also it was challenging because it was a reminder of like what we were losing in terms of our community. Like I looked at all these people, but I was a little bit in a daze being like, oh, this is not my friend Darcy. This is not my friend Kat. This is not my friend, you know, like these relationships that, you know, that we have had or built up over the last 5 years, and just knowing like, okay, we're going to have to start this over. It felt like you just climbed a mountain. Now you're standing at the bottom of a new mountain and you're just like, oh wow, I just climbed that mountain. And so it was challenging, but then now cut to four and a half months or something later. And we go to that party and all the kids are like running up to me and being like, come play with me, do the monster thing you do. Like, you know, like, and then the parents are like giving us hugs and like, we, you know, these are people that we know. And like, and I was just sort of, you know, reflecting on that and marveling at how quickly we are able and capable to build community wherever we go. Mm-hmm. And whether or not it's an us thing, if it's, you know, I do think that we are especially social humans, me and my wife.
Oh my God. Your wife showed me yesterday a to-do list of events that she wants to go do. Plans she has multiple plans she has.
She's a huge planner.
But I am not. And I'm always like, what should we do today? Probably the same thing we do every day. and we all need a one of hers in our lives.
Yeah. We balance each other well, for sure. Because I'm definitely more on your end of the planning, at least in terms of social stuff. I do like spontaneity and like letting things happen too, you know. She very much likes things pretty regimented.
But because of that, because of the planning and like the bucket list of things she wants to achieve, she is getting so much more out of life.
She does squeeze a lot of juice out of that
that one life.
Cut fruit there. yeah, so for sure. it dawned on me that we are so resilient as a family unit. You know, like my little one had already become really great friends with these kids and you know, obviously your son and just, you know, my wife chatting everyone up and it felt very warm so quickly. And I was like, wow, we really are good at this. We are not limited to these preconceived notions about how we've established our roots and, you know, not to say that you shouldn't be protective of your community and your home. Obviously, you should be those things. But we are also fully capable and resilient and able to adapt. And so that I've been sort of enjoying feeling confident and capable in that, you know, not just in me, but as our family. Like together, we are like we can kind of go anywhere and do anything and build community wherever we go. Like that's been feeling pretty cool.
I think it's fair to say that your parents did a pretty good job with you.
Probably.
Because the thing that you talk about as your marker of good parenting is raising resilient kids.
Totally.
And when you are noticing that in yourself after experiencing a huge natural disaster, you know, and what to many people would be like the worst thing that could happen, you are 4 months later super finding yourself to be incredibly resilient and joyful and adaptable and thriving
and sad and angry and scared. Like, so we hold them all.
I think that again is what you would want for your children.
Yeah.
Is you want them to not deny their feelings. I know that, you know, you and I today are really jumping into like the best case scenario and look at how cleaned up this whole thing is.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about the sadness and the fear and the worry and the stress.
It's all there. But I think it's such a function of like noticing it, paying attention to it. I mean, I was dealing with some panic attack stuff over this, you know, I will definitely say that this is the hardest thing that I've had to endure as an adult and as a parent and as a husband since those things happened. for me. This feels like the most challenging thing. And I was feeling like this real heart pain, this like chest pain. It wasn't heart like attacky pain, but it was like panic attack symptoms, like real physical blockages. Cause I'm also like a physically active person. So mm-hmm. I was like playing pickleball again and I couldn't serve in pickleball. I think I talked to you about this, mm-hmm. right? Like I just couldn't for whatever. And it's like, that's a kind of one of the easiest things to do in pickleball is to serve. And it was really interesting. Like it would just go haywire. And I was like, what is going on? And, you know, I had to really sit with that. And my therapist was like, try befriending that feeling. And that was the spell that worked on me, was that sentence. Just try befriending it. And so I would sit and talk to it, like when it came up, and be like, hey, I see you. What's going on? Like, how you feeling? Mm-hmm. You okay? You know? And just have a little bit of a conversation.
And that's a thing that would come up when you couldn't serve and you'd get frustrated, but also when you had anxiety.
Yeah, just anxiety in general about whatever, you know, career stuff that was going on or challenges with insurance or the house or whatever else. Yeah, for sure. So I was noticing it in all those places and I was just like, okay, let's get to know you. And I think just like slowing down and addressing that stuff. And there's been a lot of moments of like asking my son how he's feeling, you know, he'll throw or hit or kick or something. And then I'll be like, hey, what's going on? Are you feeling sad? And then my favorite thing ever is when he says, I'm angry or I'm sad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, you know, me too. Like, I'm really sad about X. Like, my favorite thing to do is for both of us to tell each other we're sad. It's so funny because, like, inevitably, whenever that happens, we both, like, lock into each other somehow. We're like, yeah, I'm feeling really sad too, but about X, Y, and Z, whatever it is. And just like expressing the emotion to each other and then connecting. And actually, this is something that Deb Wohl in our last episode talked about.
Mm-hmm. So let's transition to the last episode guest we had was Deb Wohl, who we both wanted to steal as our best friend. We both wanted to replace each other yeah. with her. And she won't return our calls.
Yeah, she didn't really follow up on any of that.
Sure, what's going on? No. But yes, you were saying that one of the things that she brought up when she's in a pickle with her kid is she will talk about how she feels, you know, you seem frustrated. I'm also frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, I think that honesty, and I think she talked about that too, which I really loved. Like, she's looking for honest, accurate, and age-appropriate responses mm-hmm. to her kid. Man, I loved it. It was listening to that episode again really felt like a reset. You know, for me, in terms of my value system for parenting my kiddo. So I really get a lot of value out of our own podcast. It just sort of like reminds you of the things that you hold dearest to and why you go through the hardship. Because I mean, you talked about this the other day, right? Like of like parenting not well is much easier. It's much easier to just give your kid the iPad or much easier to just
let him drown.
I don't think that would be easier, but yeah, like
to not hold a boundary or to so many to give him to my I'm trying to like keep my kid from like opening all of his birthday presents because there are so many of them that they feel
he really scored. That was a haul, man.
Oh my god, it was too much.
Because it's a first birthday? Like, what's going on
here? Because no other birthday party, every other birthday party, I've said no gifts, please. And that's been great.
And this one you were like, you know.
And this one I just didn't say anything.
People were like.
And people really showed up.
I leaned in. Yeah.
And there were a few people who asked what we want. And that was very helpful because I would be like, this one small car, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I want a timer. He wants this one timer that will help us get out of that. You know, like. Things like that, I can, well, this kind of book, he's really into Star Wars right now. Star Wars books would be cool, you know? But then my mom got him a bumper car.
Wait, how do you get a bumper car?
It's called a bumper car, but there's no other bumper cars to bump into. It's not bumper cars if there isn't another bumper car.
You need
car,
a community of bumper cars.
Then it's just a crashing car. So that's what he got for his birthday. The second we built it and like figured out what it was and how it works, we hit it. And so he's just been waking up every day since asking for it. We're like, oh yeah, it's in the garage somewhere. But anyway, just to say that like we're trying to curb the, is it an endorphin or a serotonin or what's whatever chemical
dopamine,
it is?
Probably
thank
dopamine,
you, dopamine, which probably is the- dopamine, which is the fastest burning one. But it's like he just gets this hit and then he just wants another one and another one and another one. It doesn't actually satisfy him and he doesn't actually play with them.
Right.
He just wants to keep opening them. It's I experience this with sugar or with the internet. Just one more TikTok and then I'll be satisfied. Oh, just one more. And then I actually don't even remember the hour of brain rot that I've just experienced.
Well, how many times have you like gotten a gig or something and you feel really great about the gig and you're still, there's another voice in your head that's like, okay, time for the next one. Like already, I haven't even done that last gig.
Oh yeah. When I get a gig and then I'm doing it and I'm like, I don't even want to be here. That is a terrible feeling. There are plenty of times. In fact, one of my early jobs in my 20s where I was working with Johnny Pemberton and I was complaining about something and he goes, hey, just remember, there's nowhere else you'd rather be.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's right. If I weren't here, I would wish I was here. If I saw that somebody else was here, I would wish I was them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that does help with that experience.
I was going to say to have that, even have that thought and be able to like, imagine saying that to your 3-year-old or 4-year-old.
Yeah, it's not there
that
yet.
He's not there yet. Can't really calculate or compute that. So
yeah.
That's part of our job is that we have to sort of be that external hard drive for them to process.
That's a really nice way to put that, Sandeep.
Oh, thank you.
Have you said that before?
That was the first time. I thought of that as a computer's.
Brilliant. We are the external hard drives for them.
I guess it's more external processing too, if you want to really get into
it. I don't want to.
Yeah, no, me neither.
I don't need you to. We know you went to Brown. We know that your parents made you major in computer science
and stuff.
It's fine.
No, they didn't make me major. Remember, my dad just was like, what is computer science? This sounds like a soft science. Can you do harder science? This is a soft science, beta.
I love your parents. I don't think it's mutual. I don't think they care about me the way I care about them, but I don't know.
No, they do care. They like you a lot. Yeah. They actually remember your name and they like you. Yeah. There's a lot of my friends.
I've been in the house with them a lot. We've hung out a lot.
That doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
That's no, that you've actually made an impression. That's very different.
But Deb Wool did give us a lot of wisdom.
So much juicy tidbits.
I love the way she thinks about words versus action. That was one of the things she mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like how saying I love you is actually quite hollow.
Or like it just like doesn't really.
It doesn't carry the weight of
it's
the
impossible
feeling.
It's impossible.
Well, just how rich feeling is. She is a big feeler. She described herself as sensitive constantly. No. And I'm not that big of a feeler, but I've become more of a feeler. Motherhood has definitely made me more of a feeler. And even just tying in like the tragedy that your family is working through, there is something deep and kind of like the whole point about having feelings. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I really love how language I love the like edge of our like, and when I say our, I mean like humanity's collective skill set to be able to express how deeply we feel or how deeply we understand the universe. I love those little like edge cases. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why this came up in my head when you were talking about like how like, yeah, just saying the word love doesn't quite like, I mean, you know, obviously we've written poems and I think movies and play, like we just constantly are trying to produce works that sort of like help us all experience that feeling with, but like in an attempt to scribe. Mm-hmm. And it's like the whole point of it is that like it can't be contained or it can't be constrained to like human vocabulary because it is just something that's ultimately felt. It made me think of this thing, my son's favorite number, which is Graham's number.
What's that?
If you're unfamiliar with that, it's, we found it by Googling. He was really interested in Google as a number. And so we like looked up Google and like learned about Google, the difference between Google and Googleplex. And then I stumbled upon this thing called Graham's number. And Graham's number is a number that is so big, that has so many zeros at the end of that one, that it would take all the atoms in the known universe to even write it. So you could not ever write this number. And like the idea is it's like a poetic expression of infinity, right? It's like, this is how big, like, and that's not even the biggest number, right? There's Graham's number plus one and it keeps going. But like to think of like, I just love that poetic concept of, yeah, imagine you took every single atom in the known universe and just used it to write this number. You would come up with Graham's number and that's it. You'd still have more to go. It's like, I don't know why. It just made me think of that as like, I don't know, the edges of the human capacity to understand the universe and that's outward and inwards. And like, so I really appreciate sort of, you know, Deb's perspective on the limits of our, you know, ability to explain to a kid how much we love them. Like we just can't do it. Like you just,
well, anybody. I was thinking this about kissing. Like when you watch someone kiss, you feel nothing. I feel nothing. When I see people kiss, I'm like, I mean, there could be music involved and impressive cinematography and that helps.
Yeah.
That, but it doesn't hold a candle to what it feels like to kiss.
Sure. Of course.
The whole body sensation, like why does it feel so good to put your mouth on someone else's mouth?
It's
weird, and yet it is. It can
delicious
take you to a different place.
Sure, yeah.
It is. It can transport you to space.
You never sort of like see a kiss and go like, and it doesn't bring you to a place where you feel you've been kissed or like that.
I'm sure it could remind me of a kiss, but even then,
yeah,
there's nothing really like the feeling.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
And that's kind of, I think, similar in that, like, yeah, there are things, there are poems that make people cry. There are songs that make, that move people to propose marriage.
Yeah.
There's one that they kept playing at Home Depots and, you know, people would do flash mobs and propose to people in Home Depots and all that. I'm gonna marry you. Anyway, that one.
Oh okay.
You know that one? And so that is like a fine thing, but it doesn't really compare to the feeling. And that was one of the things that we talked about on this episode too, that I have still been thinking about is, oh, also we did say at the end of that episode that this is going to air sometime in January.
Whoops.
And I'm sorry that now it is May, if not June, and we did the best we could. Sorry about
I think
that.
Everybody gets it. I really do. I think everybody gets it. It was a world. January 7th changed our world. You know, it's interesting, like how quickly I think people have moved on from it. But of course they have. It's there's so many ways in which it's similar to the pandemic to me. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot like
where we just accept our reality and move.
Yeah, I mean, like, but you know, the pandemic was a global trauma that we were all kind of working through together. This is like way more hyper localized. So we're kind of re-experiencing a pandemic type situation, but it is local to really like LA and specifically Altadena and Palisades residents and surrounding. I mean, I think it's you know, obviously a little bit more pervasive than just that, but the rest of the world has moved on. And like, I've been so incapable of following the news or anything that's going on in the world. And I know lots of bad things and tough things are happening too, but we're really kind of in this. Yeah, we're going through it. Like one of the similarities is that just in terms of the science behind what's happening, or what has happened, there's a lot of controversy behind, right? Like there's just people who sort of believe the science and some people who are like, it's not that, not as bad as what the science is saying, and public officials are not willing to admit how bad it is, because in doing so, that would mean, you know, the natural consequences of that would mean lots more people should be displaced maybe, or we shouldn't be reopening parks and all these things. And they're not willing to kind of come out and say it. So we're in, it just feels very similar to all those controversies we had around, you know, COVID and the vaccines and stuff. It's like pinging the same feelings. So I guess I'll bring it back to the episode in the sense that, I've really just had to kind of go back to the basics with like what's going on in this family unit and how do I make sure that our sort of collective central nervous system, the family's central nervous system, is functioning and capable to be resilient. And, you know, and listening to the episode yesterday for the first time and since we recorded it was really grounding, you know? Like, okay, I wrote down, here's the thing I wrote down. And I guess it's kind of what we're talking about, the whole pinch points of development thing. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, how our language isn't capable of catching up to what we actually want or need. Mm-hmm. And like that, obviously you see that you experience that very viscerally in your kids. And so trying to sort of explain the situation that we're under or understand it or help him understand it, it's been wildly challenging. Just trying to like cipher out whether or not his, you know, any sort of behavioral stuff that he's going through, is it just naturally like what is supposed to be happening at this age, or is it a result of the unprocessed trauma of having to be suddenly displaced and moved and not seeing any of your toys or things that you have, you know? Like I don't know. And maybe it doesn't matter either way. It's just kind of like how you then react to it. And so finding that language has been really tough.
Another element that we haven't really talked about, but I'm curious about when you talk about like the nervous system of your unit, is how this has affected your marriage. Because I remember learning that the three most stressful things anyone can go through are death, divorce, and moving. And I feel
really, I never heard that.
Yeah. Just because they require so much change.
Yeah.
And when things are changing, that's when we just can't find our normal, and that creates stress.
Sure.
And you kind of have experienced a kind of death, and definitely a big sudden move.
Yeah.
And how is that affecting the couple?
It's hard. Been really hard. We've been, this is a good time to be asking me because I think we're getting on the other side of that hardness, and really appreciating each other for the strengths that we do bring to the table, and recognizing that, like, you know, in so many ways we couldn't do this without each other. And so to that end, like it does vacillate. But a couple tools that we've relied on are going on weekly walks together and just making sure we like connect in that way. And the stress of all the sudden change, it totally does this thing where like it's easy to vilify each other. Mm-hmm. Because you're moving so quickly. You don't have time to sit and process. It's not like you're sitting there thinking like, hey, what are the places we should go check out to maybe move to? That has not been it. It's been like, we need to go. Like, mm-hmm. We need to like go right now and get where's the couch that we can crash on right now that feels the safest and is away from all these fires that are happening in this moment? And that really does put, it's really like, you know, a sincere stress test on your capacity for empathy for each other. Because when your partner has a different expectation and is under-resourced and is coming from a place of fear, then, and just to jumps, we just jump into our sort of like pain cycle as a couple, right? Where we're like, her anxiety will trigger my anger and my anger will trigger her anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we'll just kind of be in this like loop. And that's like And so to pull ourselves out and to access our prefrontal cortex, the part of our brains that, you know,
since you were five.
Yeah, to plug our own external hard drives back in is like so hard to, it's just so hard for some freaking reason. And so, yeah, you just have to rely on these other, okay, go take a breath, go be alone for a second, go talk to a friend, go, I mean, there's like, you know, there's ways out of it, but it's like just knowing that like my partner is not only that, you know, when she's at her worst or I'm at our worst, and to see each other, you know, not a villain, but someone who's a partner and trying the hardest and suffering and having a hard time. And like, so can I access that with empathy instead of expectation and frustration? And
yeah. Can you give her the grace you give your kid?
Yeah.
Not the same thing, but when my husband and I were having this birthday party this weekend.
Oh, totally. It can be the same.
We had a moment where we like locked eyes and we're like, okay, you and me are on the same team.
Totally.
He's the enemy. What he does, whatever happens, you and me are friends.
Right.
But yeah, it does require a certain kind of noticing of feelings and repositioning, and then
Yeah,
the noticing is the most important part, and it does feel unnatural.
Yeah, the pause. Pause, just to take a second to not be so damn reactive. It's really super challenging. This coffee doesn't help.
You know what I really like is like the improv game that this is my friend Chris Bryant said this once. Where like, what if you could just say new choice in life?
Oh, totally.
Like, what if you've done that?
Yeah, we've totally done that.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. If you could just sit, like the time that you did be like, where the f- is my, the thing I just printed out and put here?
Yeah. New choice.
Hey, honey, I think I put it down right here. Do you know where it may have been? Yeah.
New choice.
I don't need it.
You just keep saying new choice till you get to want to make out.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about the Deb Wool episode?
You know, she's so different from me. And yet, and maybe because, or maybe yet, maybe therefore, maybe yet,
mm-hmm.
I find her so compelling.
Oh, man.
She's so, she's kind of afraid of getting into trouble, and she's shy. She's a math and science person. I am the opposite of all those things. I'm a high school dropout. I like a little bit getting into trouble. I'm not afraid of getting into trouble. I'm very extroverted. She hates a party. I love a party.
Right.
I love a little chit chat all night. And I'm still like, do you want to come with me and I'll show you how I do a party and we can make it fun for you? Or I go to your world. There's a very opposites attract thing. It's possible that it's one-sided. It's possible that only one of the opposites are attracted. But I was like, man, I kind of, there's a part of me that like wants to also still be more like her. And if we may talk about the bullying thing that she talked about.
Yes.
She experienced bullying when she was in middle school, I believe.
Yes.
And I think it's clear we all can agree that middle school is everyone at their worst. Maybe girls specifically. I can speak for myself. But yeah, I was definitely my worst in middle school. I was jealous, confused, angry, going through puberty, wanting to be sexy, wanting to be safe, wanting to be liked, wanting to stand out. There's so many conflicting big wants, and very little of middle school was, you know, I saw this quote recently that that we'll post on our Instagram because it was so beautiful. It was a poem, and it was like, in any moment on any given day, I can measure my wellness by this question. Is my attention on loving, or is my attention on who isn't loving me? And this is by poet Andrea Gibson.
Woof.
Is my attention on loving, or is my attention on who isn't loving me?
Oh, I hate
might
that.
Need to get it tattooed on my body.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate how accurate that is. And then I wonder, like, oh, could I do a, like, could I run a stat on, like, how much time I spend on doing one versus the other? Mm-hmm. And it's probably, like, ugh, like 90-10. Mm-hmm. So bad. Oh, man, I love that. I hate, love and hate that.
Well, so I want to tie it back to middle school, and then I want to tie it back to parenting, because
sure. In
middle school, there is no, I would say 0% of my in-school time was focused on
loving others.
It was all on who isn't loving me.
Yeah.
Wow. What a wellness. If that's the wellness check, then I was very unwell. And I would say most kids are unwell in middle school.
Totally. And well, I think it's not that they're, I wonder if it's not that they're unwell, and if it's more that we don't properly address it
together,
and we don't really, and I think that's changing, actually, at least in the school that we're in, where there's a lot more intentionality around the social emotional development of kids and like what they are going through, these pinch points, as Deb called it. And like there is more of an awareness of, and I think it's like actually something that we can like, having this sort of aptitude as the teachers, administration, and the parents, and that sort of like unit, that team, recognizing that, yeah, like, listen, at 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old, the brain just takes a leap, and you start becoming more self-aware, and you start becoming more understanding of how you are being looked at and how you fit in. And this is a biological imperative so that you can survive properly and create community, because humans require that to survive. So this is a totally natural thing for you and your body to be doing, to really be thinking a lot more about how you represent yourself to the world and can you fit into the norm, and versus loving the unique qualities of yourself, you're much more concerned about how you're different. I was just talking to our friend Brooke, who came to visit us, and how she's like, you know, my wife and her were like going back and forth on like skincare stuff and like hair care stuff, and my wife was like, it's good that you're listening to this, you should listen to all this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what, you know, and
but why is it good for you to listen to
it? Was just kind of like, see what we go through as women to like just be quote unquote presentable to the world.
Yeah.
And I was listening, and the one thing that struck me though was that she had mentioned she like does this sort of hair care on her arms because of one. She's like, in that moment, she's like, yeah, you know, one kid in middle school teased me about my hairy arms.
Oh, yeah.
And to this day, 40 some odd or 30 some odd years later,
mm-hmm.
It's a part of my regimen. I've spent so much time, money
yeah.
energy making sure. And it's just that one wound that came at that one time. Now, had, you know, we paid more attention to, or had parents that paid more attention to,
or a system
that paid more attention to, you know, that, hey, those feelings are totally natural and mm-hmm. that's going to happen. And like had a conversation around that, and like maybe spent more, maybe that would have been time better spent than learning more fractions that day,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. Like understanding how that's, you know, that social dynamic is toxic, but like how you receive that is up to you.
Mm-hmm. And how you are wired to fit in, how this, like you said, yeah. there's this biological chemical reaction that you are responding to. This is not a defining quality of you, but your
right.
brain is making these synapses that you can choose to hold on to or not, but the choice doesn't feel like a choice in the moment.
No,
because the chemicals are chemicaling. They
yes.
are so real in the moment. This is, I think, also why they give, there's a program where people in prison can adopt dogs. I think it does this when you talk about, like, can you actually, you know, look at the ratio of how much you are loving versus how much you are worried about not being loved or not being enough?
Yeah.
If you can, and going back to parenting and owning dogs or horses or rabbits, whatever, is if you can spend more of your time loving, you are spending less of your time focusing on the love you are not receiving. And parenting is spending so much time focusing on the love you are giving.
Yeah.
You have to be giving so much love. I once did acid with a bunch of friends on a mountaintop. This is not that long ago. It was after I became a mother. And it was with Sam and a few other people. It was Sam's birthday. And we, you know, had all experienced, it was towards the end of our trip, we had all experienced a gamut of giggles and cries and talking about things that have come up for us from our youth and from our parents and from our fears. And, blah, 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 blah. And then my husband comes to pick me up, and my son hadn't gone to bed at a decent hour. So he brought him, and my son just walks in and he looks at this giant build, this like giant tent that we're in. And he's like, "There's a tent." And he just comes in. He's like, "And there are animal crackers, Mama, Sam, there are animal crackers here." And we meet all the parents, and I think everyone there was a parent, immediately re-channels. They refocus. They stop shining their light on their own face, and they shine their light outward to this kid. And it refocuses us, literally, because sometimes we are so focused on ourselves that it creates more suffering. And sometimes shining the light outwards, putting the literally like love lasering out to a kid, just recenters that ratio. And we all just like giggled and were relieved. And in a way, kids are a distraction from all of that.
Well, they're like, we're sort of forced to do that because that's how we keep them alive. And so you're right. It is sort of an exercise in that. It's like it's built in that you are going to gain a lot more time spent loving outward when you have a little one, for sure.
I'm also thinking of this. I know this is true in you and in my husband, and you are probably like my two closest men that I see the most often who have children, is you guys have a specific kind of giggle and facial reaction to the cuteness and spontaneity and spunk of a kid, that when we talk about, like, I've joked that, like, I don't know if I want to have a second or give this one back. Like, I never actually want to give this one back, but I think about, like, all of the joy, all of the giggles that I've had, all of the, oh my God, that's so cute. Like, yes, it is also intensely difficult.
Yeah.
Olympic level hard sometimes to be what I talked about in that last episode as the brake pad, as the absorber of all of this.
Totally.
Energy, this like, this lightning bolt of energy that I just have to be like, whoop, I can just suck that up and hold it in. That is intensely hard. And also the innumerable number of times that we have made that face where something is so cute and funny that nothing else really does that to us. You kind of go, ooh, you almost like grit your teeth and shake really? With how cute it is.
Yeah. No, it's so delicious and so raw and real. And we can go on forever. I feel.
We'll wrap it up.
But I coached Little League this year.
Oh, that's so
for
cute.
The first time. And so I got to, man, if money was no object, I think I would just work with kids. I think I just would. I'd really get sincere joy out of seeing children gain aptitude and skill and finding confidence in themselves. It gives me so much internal joy and pride. Like, and so having this whole set of children collectively as a team learn together and start understanding what a team even is, or how to, you know, what it was baseball, you know, learning the rules and all that stuff is great, but like really just seeing them really start to get it and see, like, you know, how they can do the thing that they absolutely could not do just 2 weeks ago, and seeing like how they light up brings so much joy. It's so joyful. That's why I was jealous of your sister. She was talking to me about how she like wants to work with little kids and stuff. And I'm like, you will never, like, if that truly is your path, I think you will never grow tired or disillusioned by that path. It's so like innate in us to be champions of our youth that I think that I feel like that energy source would be never ending.
I think I need to just repeat back to you that you said if money was no object, I would just work with kids.
Yeah.
I think you really need to sit with that.
I'll go smoke a joint and think about that.
Yeah. I'm curious because what the fuck is our life? Like what we're doing all the time is.
Well, I do want to direct this movie. Yes. I do want to do really that. Fulfilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not like your whole life purpose, but there is a part of you that.
I'm really excited to be continuing to be an assistant coach and letting that sort of happen. Like, you know, and then we talk about having a second kid. Like that's, I more and more want that reality. We'll see what the future holds. But that is, you know, going through all this and then being with all those kids and seeing how my little one has grown right behind him seeing your kiddo and being like, I even missed that age. Mm-hmm. It's sort of affirmed in me that more and more. But, you know, I'm not the only person that has to – there's a lot of other, you know, consequences and things to think about in having a second child. So that, yeah, we'll see how
maybe
it goes.
Maybe if we stagger it appropriately.
Yeah.
Then there only needs to be two adults for every four children.
This is how people attempt to have communes, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
We just got to figure it. We just got to schedule it. We just got to get in the books, open the iCal, figure it out.
We need some planners.
Guys, listeners, friends, ladies, babies, thank you all for being on this journey with us. It has been so fun and so humbling to learn all the things we have yet to learn. It's so cool to hear moms. Because there really is a wisdom in them. We can ask them a million questions. And really, there's so much that you just have to live to know. And we're grateful to be on a similar journey many years behind. And hopefully one day can only wish to be as wise as some of the moms we've had on, as all the moms we've had on. So thanks for listening this season and hope to be in touch. Keep following our Instagram at Your Mom is a Podcast. Listen to us on Spotify and iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, and we'll keep you updated on all that is ahead. Thank you and good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Your Mom is a Podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F'n Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.